Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest in part two of our conversation, John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. And John, let's talk about Johnny Cueto, a very important acquisition for the Giants. They certainly spent a lot of money there, and it could be a big ticket item as far as, you know, longer term if he doesn't opt out of his contract. And, you know, so far he's been really good. He's so creative out there on the mound. So, you know, what have you thought of Cueto so far, and is he going to give the Giants a big boost, you think, the whole season?
Well, I think it's a nice pickup. I think it's a win-win. Like you said, he has a opt-out after 2 years, so he's going to give it his all to put up the best 2 years of his life so he could go out in the open market like Greinke did, leaving the Dodgers and making a bundle going to the Diamondbacks. And if Cueto could follow in his path, it'll be even a bigger deal than it is right now with the Giants. It might not have been as big as he had hoped because he fizzled a little bit after leaving Cincinnati and going to Kansas City, give or take a couple of nice postseason games. But with Cueto here in San Francisco, it's a nice fit. It's a great pitcher's ballpark. You know, he started off quickly, winning his first three games. If he won his fourth game, he would have matched Bill Swift for most wins to start a career with the Giants as a pitcher. So Swift back in the day was 4-0. So Cueto lost his first game, but he gave up three runs in seven innings. It was a winnable effort. And he's a guy you just don't want to take your eye off of because there are movements in his delivery you just don't see by a Matt Cain or Madison Bumgarner, who look exactly the same every time. Bumgarner might come down a little bit from the left side here and there, but for the most part, they're pretty much identical every pitch. But with Cueto, that's not the case at all. He might quick pitch you. He might delay in his delivery. He might look to center field with his back to home plate, a la Louis Tiant. I mean, he's got some Marichal in him. Very creative, different pitches. And I think Buster Posey had to take a little time to figure it out. And all these Giant hitters are just saying, boy, it's real nice not having to face him anymore, because when they did, their timing was all messed up because he tried to keep you off balance. And you know, and sometimes it doesn't work, though. He gave up the deciding home run in his fourth start against the Diamondbacks with that exact pitch, with the delay and the back to the home plate, and then all of a sudden he just grooved a fastball, and then it was hit 900 feet, and that was the ball game, and that put the Diamondbacks up 3-2, and they eventually scored more runs in the ninth to win 6-2. So I think he's a real nice fit, a nice compliment to Bumgarner, and he's got that incentive to do super well in these first 2 years to opt out. And if that's the case, hey, the Giants win with two great years. If not, he's a pretty darn good pitcher for the long term as well.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, where you might see Giants relief pitcher George Contos.
It's a great golf course. It's very convenient for us to get there, and it's a very challenging course. If you're not in your game, you get in the rough. Rough's long there. It's a very beautiful course. They're very gracious and get us out there anytime we're able to get out there for an off day and play some golf. So, you know, just with how beautiful the course is and how challenging it can be, it's always a lot of fun getting out there and playing around.
A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. Now back to our conversation with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. It's funny you mentioned the movements because I was reading a story about how Louis Tiant thinks that Cueto should turn more towards second base center field, you know, the way he did. And I think a lot of kids like myself grew up imitating that. You're playing wiffle ball. You're doing Louis Tiant. But it doesn't mean you're going to throw it accurately. I don't think everybody could do that. So I don't know that Cueto feels comfortable turning all the way. But Tiant was adamant in the story I was reading that, you know, he really has to do that because it's going to be that much better for him, whether it be velocity or just fooling the hitters. I mean, you know, and it's funny because you see a guy do that and then you're seeing Jeff Samardzija do a little turn that I don't know if he ever did that before, but we're seeing that with him. You try anything you can, I guess.
Well, if you do it all the time, it won't be as shocking. I mean, if you bust it out on 1-2 or 0-2 or something like that where you need it out, an important situation, maybe you get the guy off balance. And you know, he also mixes his speeds well, his velocity. It's you might see 93, you might see 89. And, you know, that offsets his breaking pitch because he can throw all his pitches from every different angle, too. So it's, you know, with his hair flying all over the place. It must be kind of tough to see that guy. It's probably no picnic when you're in the lineup facing him. And even on the road in a park where it's hitter friendly, he's going to have to leave San Francisco and pitch half his games on the road. So it's kind of a neat story. You know, Samardzija obviously is coming off a bad year, and I would think he would be a solid three. But with this rotation, it's really all about Peavy and Kane. They can't just be five inning pitchers. You know, five innings, four runs. That's Peavy's last game. They've got to figure out how to get, you know, into the sixth and maybe even into the seventh here and there and be a lot more efficient and keep the Giants in the game a little bit more. And that's where this rotation is going to be decided, you know, because, you know, the top three, if on, could be as good as anybody's top three.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't you think San Francisco appreciates a guy like Cueto, too, because he's different out there, you know, that delivery, like you said, the hair. I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, Nuke LaLoosh kind of, you know, that weird delivery, wild style Nuke LaLoosh from the movie Bull Durham. But he wasn't very successful early on in the movie. But Cueto has shown that he's a consistent guy in the National League. So, you know, I would think that Giants fans right away were ready to embrace him.
Yeah, and he's kind of won over his teammates. He's kind of a fun-loving guy. Even on the mound, you'll see him laugh after something goes goofy. So he was on third base in his fourth start against the Diamondbacks, and Hunter Pence draws a walk. And I took my camera out and I said, I don't know why, but I want to film this. And so he draws a walk, and then I pan over to Cueto coming from third base to home. It took him 13 seconds to score.
Wow!
I mean, I saw Willie McCovey draw an intentional walk, and it took him like a minute and a half to get to first base back in the day. And Cueto, it took forever. I mean, Deion Sanders could probably hit a, you know, inside the park home run in 13 seconds.
Right.
But Cueto took 13 seconds to score. And once he got to the plate, he tried to touch the plate. He missed it and then went back. So it's probably another second or two. And then it took him another 13 seconds to get to the dugout. And it's like, it's a slow moving, cool cat. And in the clubhouse, like I said, he's kind of won over his teammates. He knows English well enough, but he always insists on using an interpreter. And unlike other players who use interpreters, he doesn't have to listen to the question repeated in Spanish. He hears the question in English and then starts answering it in Spanish, which tells me that maybe he doesn't need an interpreter, but that's always been him.
That's funny. And baseball needs characters. The Giants need as many characters as they can. You know, one thing that I think we learned about Cueto right away, and I guess Bruce Bochy did, is that if he has a bad first inning, it doesn't mean that he's going to have a bad game and you can't win that game. We saw that against the Dodgers on that Sunday where he was terrible in the first inning, but then he recovered. And Bruce Bochy seems to trust him a lot. There was another game where he could have brought up a pinch hitter for Cueto, decided not to. He wanted to just keep him in the game longer. I mean, there's definitely a trust, I think, that's already there. Do you see that?
Yeah, and I think that's rotation-wide, actually. He was asked that just before his most recent start about having the faith in a guy like Cueto to leave him in, and his quote was, "I'd like to leave my starters in." I mean, it's not just not Cueto. It's Bumgarner, it's Samardzija. You know what? Maybe he's gone a little bit too far with Kane or Peavy, mm-hmm. thinking, well, just one more inning, just another out. And maybe it backfired, but that's kind of the trust he has in these guys, and maybe that's why some of these pitchers want to do a little bit more for him, because, hey, you know, it's kind of mutual. You have trust in me, then I want to show you that I'm worthy being out here. But with Cueto, I think he kind of has a rubber arm. He can pitch a lot. You know, he's been healthy so far, and he can rebound from an awful first inning like we saw with the Dodgers and then put himself in position to win. So I think that was their only win in the last 9 games, right?
Yeah.
You know, that Cueto game. And so that's what you need to win a game, give up all those runs in the first inning. But that on that one day, the Giants offense did actually come to work.
Back with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle in just a moment.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-L-O-G-O.
You know, in recent years, John, the Bay Area has been kind of spoiled. I mean, ever since the Giants won that World Series in 2010, they've been so successful, you know, winning two more of them and being in contention every year. And now you've got the Warriors defending their championship. And I just wonder what you think about just the whole overall mindset now of Bay Area fans, especially Giants, Warriors. It's changed so much. I mean, there were so many down years for the Warriors and the Giants, too. I mean, there were years where things weren't going so well. And now it's expected. I mean, it's an even year. Giants are winning the World Series. Warriors, come on. I mean, they've got to defend that title. Look at what they did in the regular season. And it's just totally different now. How do you think that affects everybody, whether it be organization and, I don't know, so much players, but just the whole outlook on these teams now?
Well, it's a different mindset, a different culture. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I remember as a kid going out the Candlestick and sneaking into the games on a consistent bases, and the Warriors tickets were free on the carton of Christopher Milk. And, I mean, that's how easy it was to get into games. Now everybody's priced out. You have to know somebody. You have to get a gift. You have to maybe get lucky online with the last minute ticket. But it's so different. There's an expectation that maybe we haven't seen since Joe Montana's days, where you just knew every year was going to be a Super Bowl. And that means, yeah, you are spoiled. You look at those Braves teams that won, what, 16 straight divisions? Well, the attendance was so bad because they didn't show up until the postseason.
Yeah, we're going to win again, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just so the same boring method of winning. Now, obviously, the Warriors are a lot more exciting than that because they tend to win games in entertaining fashion. And the Giants do the same every other October, and that's something that fans in the Bay Area have come, almost like you said, to expect. Even year, okay, I'll see you in October. And with the Warriors, it's not about doing well in the playoffs. It's about winning it all or bust. and that's it's like living in New York back when Jeter
right.
was dominating, and you just expected every New York team to be great, and if you weren't, then you'd be booed or you'd be chastised. You'd be written up in the columns as a failure. And, we went through so many bad years with the Warriors, so many bad years with the Giants, that sometimes you wonder, is this really appreciated as much as it should be? Because it's you get to the point where, just winning becomes boring. I mean, I don't think it's there yet, but it's certainly expected.
And it's hard to get a ticket. I mean, to both of these teams now, and of course, the Giants have sold out. What is it? It's over 400 straight sellouts. And I just remember going to games as a teenager at Candlestick Park, and I mean, they were lucky to get 18, 20,000 at Candlestick some nights, and it's freezing, and you know, it's just so different now. It's very difficult for fans to get a good seat. You got to save up your money for these opportunities.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate in a lot of ways because maybe the kids get priced out. You have to have filthy rich parents, or you have to be real lucky knowing the right person. And I think it's going to be worse once the Warriors move into the city. I'm not sure if the regular Warrior fans are actually going to these games anymore. The other day we saw a wave at the arena watching a basketball game, the wave. I mean, it was disastrous.
Yeah, it's strange.
come on, Warrior fans, they never do the wave. So these obviously weren't your prototypical go-to-the-game Warrior fans. And
no.
It's just going to get worse in San Francisco. Who knows if it's going to turn into another Levi's where after halftime nobody's there because everybody's boozing it up in the club.
Yeah.
And who knows? It's certainly going to be a higher price, a tougher ticket. And are the real fans going to go? Who knows? Maybe just the folks who want to be seen.
To finish up here, I wanted to talk a little bit about how your job has evolved. And, you know, for our younger listeners who want to get into journalism, it's so different than when you started, of course, but I don't think a lot of people realize how much you have to put into this now as a columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle. You and I talked about it a little bit off the podcast, just about what you have to put in besides the writing aspect of it, because there's a lot going on with social media and even the video that you put together. So tell us a little bit about that, how it's changed for you and, you know, what you had to learn along the way.
Oh, yeah, sure. When I started this, once the deadline came and went, there was nothing you can do. You give your best effort. You write your stories. You report on the news. You submit your copy. And then that was it. You just go on with your life. But now there really are no deadlines. If there's a breaking story, there's Twitter, there's a blog, there's sfgate.com, sfchronicle.com. You put it up right away because the news is now. The news isn't waiting for it tomorrow. It's today's news now. It's not today's news tomorrow. So back in the day, you didn't know what maybe the competition wrote until you picked it up the next day on your doorstep. Now you know what the competition wrote before you leave the press box or before the game ends. It's really hard to get any kind of scoop these days because it's the news is out there. Everything is just happening at the moment. So it's a different world, and it's great that readers are able to find out what's going on now throughout the world, throughout the sporting world, you know, everywhere. But sometimes you have to be careful. It's too often people send stuff out that maybe they don't check their sources. They don't get two sources. They just use one, and you're wrong. Happens an awful lot in baseball. My goodness, the winter meetings, you wonder, I mean, if you're like a one hitter, 100 hitter. I mean, some of these guys just put everything out there, and then you look at it 3 months later and say, that wasn't even close to being the truth.
Right.
So you really have to check your sources, and if you need to wait a minute or 5 minutes or 5 hours to get the story right, well, that's a lot more responsible than what I see on social media sometimes, is just getting it out there. Because the batting average for some people who want to be first isn't all that good.
What about players in social media? I mean, I was reading a story about NBA players actually are allowed to look at their phones at halftime, and they do. I don't think they tweet anything out, but you know, baseball players, they're on the field for whatever it is, 3 hours. They're not going to be looking at their phone. Do you think, though, that, you know, are some players maybe going away from social media a little bit more lately just because, you know, they're concerned they might say something wrong, and, you know, because it is kind of that easy way to vent, and you maybe have to think about things a little bit before you put it out there. What are you noticing about players and social media?
Well, I think I notice about players and social media the same way I notice about players on the road. You know, you hardly see them anymore. I mean, there are times where you could walk around town, go into a restaurant, go into an establishment, whatever, and you'd see players over at the next table. And, you know, these days, I think they're a lot more careful because they don't want to be photographed at midnight somewhere having a late bite to eat. Where back in the day, it was innocent, but now you kind of put two and two together and get seven. And you say, well, what's this guy doing out? He just went 0-for-4. He goes 0-for-4 tomorrow. Is that the reason? And it's kind of unfortunate, but that's just the way the world we live in. And I think the players are used to that. You know, I mean, they're used to drug testing. You know, where a lot of players fought it. Now these players, that's all they know is drug testing. So it's not like it's a big change for them. It's a big change for the older people who remember what it was like back in the day. So it's one funny story about social media and Twitter. I was covering the Giants in Atlanta, and I just said, hey, you got to be careful with this stuff, right? Sometimes you want to be fast, but you also got to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And Lincecum was doubtful for his next start. And we're in the clubhouse after the game, and we asked him, he says, hey, are you going to be okay for tomorrow? And he said, yeah, I'm good for tomorrow. So we had been speculating yes or no. So anyway, I tweeted out, I tried to tweet out, Lincecum says tomorrow. And I tried to be cute and short by writing S-E-Z, right? So S-E-Z was corrected to S-E-X. So it says Lincecum tomorrow, right?
Oh.
And all of a sudden I get all these replies from, I imagine, women who are saying, oh, that's great. You know, tell me when, tell me where. So I said, oh, geez, what have I done here? See if I can correct this.
Oh, but my gosh. one letter.
Yeah, but it apparently corrected it for me, thinking I didn't mean that I meant something else. So be careful, man.
You definitely have to be careful. Well, John, thank you so much for the time. Look forward to seeing you at the ballpark. And by the way, happy birthday to your mom. You were telling me she's turning 90?
90, April 24th.
Well, that's great. A happy birthday to your mom, and I'll talk to you soon.
I'll let her know. Thanks a lot, Joe.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, our regular guest here on thesportsvirus.com. Coming up on Thursday, we'll have another guest for you to talk Giants baseball. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.